G'day everyone. Welcome to our second podcast. This is Linda Ross from the Garden Clinic, and it's great to have you back again with me. The podcast just gives us a little bit more time to get into the nitty-gritty. Each week I have a special guest and we can talk about a topic of conversation that we're both completely and utterly passionate about. If you'd like to ask any questions about what you hear on the podcast or just something that's happening in your garden that you'd like more clarification about, please don't hesitate to hop onto the Facebook page. That's the Garden Clinic Facebook page, or Instagram. We're always on there checking our Instagram comments. And of course, head to the website for more information, gardenclinic.com. But it's lovely to have your company with me, and welcome to episode 2 of the Garden Clinic podcast.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.
Today, it's wonderful autumn day, and this is the kind of day where I start getting itchy fingers. I think, what can I plant? Autumn is the best time to plant. I know you've heard it ad nauseum. A lot of people think when they're starting gardening that spring is the best time to plant anything, because spring, of course, it's the beginning of the new year, etc. Plants just want to grow. But what has come to my knowledge over decades is that when you get plants in the ground in autumn, they have a much better success rate, because their roots get into the ground, into the soil, and they make use of that soil warmth, and then they go into the winter, and then when spring hits, they just hit their strides. But one of the things that I love to do in autumn particularly is to plant spring bulbs. They've become a real passion of mine, and I know gardeners everywhere just love planting a little pocket full of tulips or daffodils or alliums. Some gardeners I know get a little sad when their tulips sort of just come and go and don't reflower. So today our topic is bulbs, in particular spring bulbs. And I want to concentrate today on the bulbs that really give us a lot of bang for their buck. So a pocket full of change will just create bulbs that come year after year, getting bigger and bigger clumps for you in your garden. So they're the bulbs I want to concentrate today. And so I've got my very special friend, Tim Druitt from Red Earth Bulbs. He is a specialist in bulbs and has been growing them for years. He's got a nursery in Sylvan in Victoria on the foothills of the Dandenong Ranges. And it's with great pleasure that I welcome Tim to the show. Good morning, mate.
Good morning. How are you going?
Excellent. How are you? Now, you've had a huge autumn already, haven't you, with a couple of garden shows and plant fairs?
We have. We've been flat out busy. We've done sort of 3 or 4 major shows around the country in Melbourne and Sydney, all of our regular dispatch as well. We've had a very busy time offering bulbs.
Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, of course, gives you a wonderful opportunity to sell your bulbs directly to the public. And then in Sydney, the Collectors Plant Fair, precisely the same thing for New South Wales. What do you like about being on those stands, you know, selling directly to the public?
Look, it's good fun. I mean, predominantly we wholesale most of our products, so it's great to be able to get out and hands-on talk to the customer and share information and knowledge with them, so they really have confidence in knowing what they're doing in their garden with spring flowering bulbs. And it's enjoyable. It's a change of scenery for us, sort of from being in the sheds all day to looking, staring at bulbs, actually having interaction with people and sharing the joy of what spring bulbs can do.
So. Yeah, everyone loves your product, your bulbs, because they're exceptional quality and a huge range as well. When did you start growing bulbs?
Look, I'm told I was 18 months old when I asked Dad for some Nareens to plant under some trees.
Oh, and Nareen was the cause.
Yeah, Nareen was the first one. I grew up in a bulb family, I guess, all the way through. Sort of 10, 11, 12, I was sort of selling bulbs at markets and things like that. And At 19, I took over from mum and dad from their business. We've changed it a lot, sort of thing. I'm 30 now, so about 10 years been growing them commercially. And each year we change and add things or grow more or less. And, predominantly now focusing on sort of daffodils, lilies and dahlias are our major crops at this stage.
They really are so popular, aren't they? And I think, you know, popularity wanes and ebbs over the years. But dahlias, their resurgence of popularity has been astounding, driven partially, I suppose, because of the florists and just people just loving dahlias again now. But daffodils as well, tulips and lilies are so popular these days.
Oh, definitely. Look, I mean, the lilies, I say to people, they're almost like the daffodils of summer. They're so easy to grow, and they're a plant and forget bulb. They don't need yearly lifting. They don't need any special treatment. Just a bit of fertilizer when they're sort of coming up, and away they go. Other than that, there's nothing that you really need to do for them, which for me, when you put something in the garden and you don't have to do a lot for it and it's going to give you rewards, what more do you want?
Yeah, so these lilies are trumpet-shaped. Often they have many flowers on the one stem. They would get more and more flowers as they go each year, wouldn't they? They'd get bigger and better displays?
Definitely. So it depends what you start with. It all comes down to bulb size, which is something we're really passionate about. Regardless of what it is, the size has to be good. It has to be a nice, fat, firm bulb, and every bulb has its own size as to where it should sit on the scale, so to speak. But a lily, you want it to sort of be at least 12 centimetres around, but a bulb that size might produce two flowers on the stem. If you get a bulb of the same variety that, say, is 20 centimetres around, that could have 8 or 10 flowers on the stem.
Oh,
so
right.
Selecting, you try and look for those bigger bulbs. Now, it is conditional because some varieties don't grow as big. But overall, the bigger the bulb, the more flowers you're going to have. And the longer they're in the ground, the more multiplication you're going to get. They'll naturally multiply under the ground. They don't need any special treatment for that. And the more of that multiplication, obviously, the more flower stems you're going to have and therefore the more enjoyment.
So bulbs, well, I know that when I bought some lilies from you, I bought some lovely dark burgundy black ones, really dark, which was spectacular. And I was so thrilled at their flowering last summer. They tend to flower really sort of December?
Yeah, look, lilies can start, depending how warm you are, they can start from mid-November. And then the later variety, probably the last variety for us, is normally the end of March.
Yeah, right.
So it's quite a long window, but it all depends on their breeding and where they originated from.
And then each bulb gets planted quite deeply, I think. It certainly worked for me. And then each one had a timber, or in my case, a bamboo stake, where I could just sort of hook it up and so it didn't become too top heavy and the stems didn't snap. But then I got this wonderful sort of chorus, this rousing kind of clump, and I put 5 or 7 together in the one sort of clump. I spaced them about, 10, 15 centimetres away. And so I had these wonderful clumps coming out and they just trumpeted these fantastic flowers. And really, the colour's really up to you because they're so widespread, the cultivars these days, really all colours of the rainbow.
It most certainly is. Like we specialise in bringing in garden varieties that perform really well in the garden situation. And we look to Holland, we bring them in from Holland and then acclimatise them to Australia. And we aim for things that just, they aren't here. They're not commonly available. We want something different in our garden. We don't want the same old, same old. And so we've been sort of bringing in a lot of lovely double oriental lilies, which kind of look like roses with that stunning oriental perfume. And a really handy way to plant the lilies when you're talking about spacing is using your thumb to your pinky finger as a measuring stick.
Oh, great. Yeah, that width.
Such a simple way of doing it. And you go, right, well, there's my spacing. And that's about 15 centimetres on the average person and done, sort of thing. You know where, how far you want to go apart. And the lilies will thrive in that sort of environment. And usually double their depth, so how deep the bulb is, you put another bulb's worth of soil on top and nice and easy to do it.
I had the black one. What was the one that I bought, the black one?
You had Mapira, which is an LA lily. So
Mapira, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Gorgeous. And I had it growing through big clumps or swathes of flannel flower. So the flannel flower was all silver and white little flowers.
Lovely.
And then
yeah,
this big Mapira came out with these dark, dark burgundy, almost black trumpet flowers. It was quite dramatic. So, great contrast. But of course, oriental lilies come in all colours, from pure white, that lovely Casablanca kind of one, through the pinks and deep pinks, lipstick pinks, oranges. oranges, yellows, reds, really.
Yeah,
it's a huge range. Now, very important, I suppose, with Liliums when they're dying down, Tim, is not to prune the foliage off too quickly.
Definitely. And look, that's a rule with most bulbs. People tend to go, oh, they're looking messy, I want to chop them down. And it's one of those things, we say plant some annuals or perennials around them so that they can sort of screen off any messiness. But most bulbs actually digest the previous season's flower stem and foliage to make next season's flower and foliage. So if you were to go out now and buy, for example, a tulip or a hyacinth or a daffodil, and you cut it in half, you'd be able to see how many flowers are inside that bulb now.
Wow.
It's all stored from last year.
All right.
Really important.
That is fabulous information. So Liliums, they're number one on my list of giving bulbs that just give more and more and more every year. So they're really set and forgets. Number two on my list that I absolutely love, Darling's Possums, is the gladioli.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, gladdies are fantastic. I bought a mini one from you called Simonious, is it? Is that how
That's
you pronounce
correct.
It?
Yeah, gladioli Simonious.
I bought a big packet, 25, and I was delighted, absolutely tickled pink by this mini little gladioli, which was probably only about 30 centimetres high.
Yeah, that would be correct. Yeah, it's a shorter growing one. Gladiolis are kind of broken up. It's such a diverse family. You can have gladioli flowering all year round with their different cultivars and breeding. So that's sort of, it's related to the Nainus hybrids, which are their ones you buy in autumn and plant in autumn for late spring flowering.
Yeah.
Again, they're a plant and forget bulb. You really don't have to do anything for them. They'll multiply naturally under their own steam.
Yeah.
And the longer they're in, the bigger those clumps will get. And the only time you really dig them up is when you want to spread some around the garden further.
That's right. And so I counted how many flowers I had on each spike because I'm that kind of girl. There was 13 flowers on each spike and that group of 25 bulbs. And that were just a profusion of pale pink. And each petal had a little kind of cerise triangle on it, and they're just pretty as a picture. So that was a mini gladioli called Simonious. But there is another very popular gladioli called Communis subspecies Byzantinus, and a lot of the big open gardens around Australia are using this, a little bit bigger than the mini one that I had, but an iridescent kind of what colour would you call it? Cerise or?
It's a cerise, yeah. And it's kind of a different flower structure as well. The flower on it's almost foxglove-like.
Yes.
And it just sort of wafts in the breeze. It's kind of got a more thin or a thinner build foliage, and it just wafts in the breeze and really carries a very elegant variety, but so bright that it stands out and you see it from a mile away.
You do, and it's great with sort of salvias, like purple salvias and pale blue, you know, Nepeta or catmints and things like that. Again, planted bulk, like at least, you know, I think you need to plant at least sort of 20 in a patch.
Yeah.
So it makes impact.
Yeah.
So that's, so any other gladiolis that we should be thinking as our number two best bang for your buck?
Yeah, look, coming into winter, because there's obviously the gladioli that you purchase over winter and plant late spring, and they're for your summer flowering versions. There's some newer gladioli coming out now called Glamour gladioli. So they're not as tall as sort of the traditional florist gladioli, which are up around 1.5 metres. These are sort of designed for smaller gardens, which a lot of us now have.
Yep.
And they're sort of 75, 80 centimetres. And they're brilliant, in general, tricolour flowers. So they've got three different colours in the flower, and they are that traditional gladioli-type bloom, like the Dame Edna situation, but just such bright, vibrant colours and that shorter growth, and they're going to give summer colour, kind of along with lilies. And the great things with those is, basically, you plant them after the frosts have finished, and from plant to flower is pretty much on the dot 100 days.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay, number three. I have to go with the drumstick allium.
Oh, definitely. Can't go past drumstick.
The drumstick. So a couple of years ago, I bought 250 drumstick allium from you and I dotted them all around my garden and they come out. So if anyone's gone to England, Chelsea Flower Show at that time of the year, the giant allium is a sort of a huge lilac ball on a stick and everyone goes, it's allium giganteum. We all go, we all absolutely love it. And then we all crestfallen when we come home to Australia and we can't grow it because it's not cold enough here. And particularly those in Sydney and New South Wales, there's really only one allium that we can grow, and that's the drumstick allium. Each flower is the size of a golf ball, and they start out the most wonderful sage green, and then slowly as the flowers open in that little golf ball-y kind of tight bud, they go a magenta-y kind of burgundy colour. And they hover on little dots over the garden, and again, look absolutely amazing. They flower early summer, and they just profusion in my garden. My whole garden just goes into this wonderful sort of magenta dotty rage, and I absolutely love them. And again, they just multiply every year, don't they, Tim?
They do. And look, the brilliant thing with alliums is how long they last. And look, even when they've, I guess, for want of a better word, they've finished flowering or they've died off, that stem will stay there for quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
A dead stem sort of thing. And it gives this sort of elegance and earthy, organic look through the garden. And it really catches people's eye even when the colour has diminished from it. And they make a brilliant cut flower and even a brilliant dried flower in the house as well. So it's such a fantastic bulb to grow a few of your own flowers too.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting form and shape, just that lovely little circle, yeah. I think, works well in an arrangement when you're picking your own flowers. And often that one definitely flowered at the same time as the lilies, my Mapira. So I had that little burgundy dotted allium, and in my, you know, I love picking flowers and giving them away to friends. And then the Mapira lilium was the deep black. And then I also had some wonderful burgundy kangaroo paws, some lilac kangaroo paws at the same time, and some flannel flowers. And they made the most wonderful floral arrangements just during that sort of early summer period. A lovely sort of colour combination. All right, number three, that was the drumstick allium. Look, let's go to number four and just tell me a little bit more about Ixias.
Ixias are such a tough bulb. They're so easy to grow. They originate from South Africa, and a lot of the South African bulbs thrive in Australia because we are on a very similar geographical plane. And so they come over here and they just acclimatise to our area so well. They naturalise in the garden. Depending on variety, sort of, you can allow around a metre in height.
Yep.
And they're called the cornflowers sometimes as well. I'm not quite sure why. Yeah. They have no relation to the corn. But brilliant little, very starry flowers, I guess, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And they can range from your white, your pink, your apricots, through to the stunning Ixia amethystina, which is one of the blues, the duck egg blues.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Which is, that's a taller grower and such a wonderful bulb in the garden. And again, they sort of waft in the breeze with those starry flowers and they catch the eye. They're a cheaper bulb to buy. You could sort of pick up 25 Ixia bulbs for maybe $10, $8, $10.
A bargain. And then have it forevermore.
Exactly.
They remind me of a jewel box because they're all the colours of jewels, like rubies and amethysts and garnets. And, you know, they're really jewel-like. And you're right, they just waft in the breeze. You can plant them in through roses, in through perennials, and just have that lovely seasonal ephemeral display. My daughter and my mum planted maybe 100 of them, maybe 6 years ago, and every spring they come up an absolute picture.
Yeah, look, I mean, I love Ixias. You just can't go past them, especially down here in Melbourne. We get some really hot, harsh summers, and it can be hot and harsh still as they're coming into flower, and they still hold their flower. They don't need the water, and they look magnificent.
All right. Well, we've spoken about so many sort of unusual bulbs that maybe some people don't know. Maybe they did. Let's go into some of the really fashionable bulbs like the species tulips. I know at this time of the year, Keukenhof in Holland is in full swing and a lot of people are going on garden tours to see, you know, a million tulip bulbs and what that looks like. If we were to choose tulips, which ones would give us a secondary flowering?
It's a tricky question because it does come down to individual variety sometimes.
Yeah, right.
We had a yellow variety or a baby yellow variety in the Triumph class. And we had a lady at the Collector's Plant Fair 2 years ago, and she purchased some, and based on my recommendation that they would perform for her. And we had a lovely email from her 2 years after she bought them saying she walked down the side of her house and saw this yellow pot, and she had no idea what it was, and she'd actually left them in the pot and forgotten about them after their first season, and they'd come back and flowered brilliantly for their second season in the same pot with no special care. So that was tulip friendship. But in warmer climates, what we usually say, the best ones to plant are going to be ones that flower earlier, which are the Triumph tulips, but they're not always guaranteed to come back each season. The single late tulips, or sometimes they're sold as Monet or French tulips.
Oh, yes, the Monet tulips, yep.
Yeah, look, we've had them in the garden for up to 8 years now. Look, I'll admit the first year is their best, most brilliant year, but they will repeat flower coming through over that period of time afterwards sort of thing. So we're doing trials to see how long we can get them to go for, but look, the species tulips you can't really go past, especially in Sydney and surrounds. Anything from the species tulip clusiana. So there's different hybrids like clusiana cynthia, the lovely baby yellow with a red stripe on the outside, and beautiful glaucous foliage, so blue-green foliage. They naturalise really well in a warm environment, and they don't need to be dug up every year. They're a smaller bulb. The bulb's about the size of your fingernail, your thumbnail.
Yeah, right.
But they will perform really well and give that touch of class in the garden that not everybody has, and really perform to sort of what people view as a tulip. But, yeah, it's very good to plant and easy to look after.
And I know in Sydney, from many years of planting tulips, we have an office that's right on a main road. And so Mum and Dad and I really just love every year planting like 250 tulips right along the front, just to freak everybody out, really, because Sydney, you just don't expect to see tulips. And people just sort of, their mouths drop as soon as they see this wonderful swathe of tulip bulbs. But I found that planting them later here, sort of really the first week of June is the best planting time for tulip bulbs in Sydney, but probably not in Melbourne.
Look, it varies. Tulips are a bit different. Their optimum planting temperature is when the soil is around 15 degrees.
Yeah, right.
So obviously that can vary every year, and not everybody can tell when their soil is at 15 degrees. But essentially, we're just starting to dabble with some of our tulips now. We're sort of getting down in temperature now at night time.
Yep.
So really, once you get a substantial autumn break and your nighttime temperatures are consistently down, you know, 10 or below, then you can probably start looking at planting your tulips. And it doesn't make a lot of difference when they're planted as to when they're going to flower.
Okay.
So they'll still activate. But if you plant them too early when we are getting humidity and warmth, that can be detrimental to the flower and they can abort the flower.
All right. And just quickly, let's say for all of these little bulbs that we mentioned, what are their fertilising requirements?
Look, it does vary for a lot of different bulbs, but the most basic rule of thumb is as they're coming into flower is when they're ready to feed. So prior to that, they're expelling all of their energy. They're trying to produce their flower. They're trying to get that out quickly so that they can reproduce. As soon as they're finished with that flower, they're turning to, right, I need to make my bulb for next year so I can do this again. So that's when their most important availability for food is. Immediately after they've flowered, they go, right, I need food, I need moisture to make a nice fat bulb so I can do this again next season. Prior to that, it's all about let's push it out and make beautiful flowers so the bees come and pollinate it. But, yeah, crucial to make sure food is available to them after they've flowered. So we usually say just before they come into flower, throw some food around then. It needs to be a relatively quick release fertiliser. You don't want to give them something that takes 9 months to break down because they only have a sort of a 2 or 3 month feeding window. And then allow the foliage, like I said before, to die back into the bulb, and then you're pretty much guaranteed the flowers for the following season.
Oh, wonderful. All right, number 6 on my list of bulbs that keep on giving is, of course, the very old-fashioned freesia. Delightfully fragrant, can be weed-like in some areas of Australia. But one of those bulbs that herald spring, of course, because it flowers pretty much on time on August the 30th. What do you think about freesias?
Oh, look, I love freesias. And look, I mean, sometimes a weed's just anything out of place, really.
It is.
Look, it's such a beautiful perfume and such an elegant flower, such a long-lasting cut flower as well. We have the freesia refractor alba, or what's commonly called the granny's freesia, sort of naturalised in our lawn areas.
Yeah.
On the nature strips, and they just pop up and do their thing. And that is something that look, they do get trimmed by the mower after their flower, but they come back year after year, and they're superb, the perfume. But some of these newer, I guess, cut flower strain or larger strain freesias, and the double freesias as well, the perfume that they carry and the touch of class they add to the garden and for how long they flower for, they're going to have at least a month, 6 weeks of colour.
Because they're quite a much bigger flower than the normal granny's freesia that you call it, but they're much bigger and there are a double blossom.
Yeah, definitely. And they can sort of reach up to 50, 60 centimetres in height.
Wow.
And often sort of have branching habits. So it's not just a single stem with the flowers at one end. You get a few side shoots on that stem as well with some little flowers as well.
And would they repeat flower year after year, these big double freesias?
They do, yeah, yep. Definitely. The only probably downfall with the freesias is they like a very well-drained position over the summer. So they don't want to be
wet or boggy over the summer months.
Oh, that's no problem in Sydney. It hasn't rained for 6 months. All right, well, that's a really tried and true one, the freesia. But lovely that there's single colours available. So you can, you know, get a lovely strong gold. You've got some beautiful, the purple rain, which is a double magenta, which is really lovely.
For sure. And look, some of the lilacs are sort of breeding some lilacs into singles and doubles now, and they make a really nice contrast in bouquets and things like that, not an overpowering colour.
Yeah, and, gorgeous.
Just really blends, and then you get the perfume from them as well.
All right. Well, we could talk bulbs all day because there's just so many of them. But let's talk a little bit more about Dutch iris, because in my experience, Dutch iris keep giving year after year. Quite tall, though, at least, you know, the 3 foot mark, but they can give such a huge explosion of that wonderful sort of cobalt blue Dutch iris, or that lapis lazuli colour that I love so much.
For sure. Look, I mean, Dutch iris are so easy to grow as well. Very similar growing requirements to the freesias. They love their full sun. If they get too much shade, they're going to get floppy.
Yeah.
But overall, look, Dutch iris perform really well. Some of the paler colours can be a little trickier to grow.
Yeah, there's that pale blue one.
Yeah, there's some of the really pale blues and some of the sort of yellows and bicolours can be a little bit trickier to grow. But the white and the blue are generally very vigorous and tough, and they're just a plant to get bulb to the extent where you'll try and dig them out, and I promise you, you'll never get them all, and they'll pop back up and
yeah, and surprise you. Yeah, that lovely white one's Casablanca, and that lovely deep sort of cobalt blue, that iridescent lapis lazuli one, is called Acapulco. They're just brilliant in the garden. Absolutely love them. All right, so look, there's so many more we could discuss because there's such a huge range of bulbs in the world. But are there any ones that I've missed that we must talk about?
Look, we have to talk about the daffodils. Everybody sort of, a lot of people in Sydney go, I can't grow daffodils. And it's not true. If they plant early flowering varieties, they are going to perform and flower really well in the Sydney environment.
Okay, so what's some of the good early?
Look, I love Moneymaker.
Yeah.
Massive yellow trumpet with off-white petals. In the right environment, it can get to nearly a metre in height and has a stem as strong as a telegraph pole type thing. So it really stands out. And the boot, it carries a perfume.
Wow.
And so it's a daffodil. It's not a jonquil, but it does carry that perfume. And look, any of the jonquil family, I mean, it's kind of funny. People go, I don't want jonquils, I want daffodils, or vice versa. I sort of look at them and say, well, botanically, they're all actually the same.
So, Narcissus, yeah.
Yeah, they're all Narcissus. There's 13 classes of Narcissus, and Tezethas, which are what we call jonquils, is just one of those classes.
Yeah.
But any of those Tezetha hybrids, they'll perform really well in Sydney as well and thrive, and they can actually go in a damp or boggy situation. But look, you can't go past the daffodils for the plant to get the multiplication, the years of colour that they're going to give, especially if you're in a warm climate, target early flowering varieties.
Right. What about that pure white one called White Dream?
Oh, that's magnificent. The flower on that is the size. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5". It's the size of my hand.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely massive flower. A little bit of a perfume to it, strong stem. We run out of it every year. It's in such popular demand. We can never keep up with White Dream. There's White Dream and White Ideal. They're very similar sister seedlings, and the popularity of them is phenomenal.
There's another lovely one that jumps out of your range called Spellbinder, with that just incredibly soft lemon, and the trumpet is sort of icy white.
Yeah, look, Spellbinder, it's a reverse bicolour daffodil. So it starts out one colour and fades to another.
Oh, wow.
So it starts that limey sulphur colour.
Yep.
And as it ages, it almost goes to a very light, creamy white sort of with flecking through it. So it's quite a different one, but it's a very long-lasting variety too. So we're talking 4 weeks of flower, 5 weeks of flower.
Oh, wow, that's a huge time period. What would be the best bulbs for a pot?
Best bulb for a pot. Look, in the daffodil world, obviously there's so many different varieties. There's hundreds of thousands of them available. It depends what look you want, but any of the miniatures are brilliant in pots.
Yeah, a little tete-a-tete.
Yeah, tete-a-tete, you can't go past. And there's another one called Spring Sunshine, which is a newer one on the market. And that's a more pastel yellow. So it's a pastel yellow with a little orange trumpet to it. It's a very good grower. And multiplies probably a little bit better than tete-a-tete does. And,
okay, so that's nice just to bring out when it's flowering, pop on the outside table, have a cup of tea, brighten up your sunshine day. It's a lovely little one for a low bowl.
Lovely low bowl of them, and, you know, put 25 bulbs in a a 20-centimetre bowl sort of thing and just mass them, and the colour, you can't go past. They last and last. So it's a really good lasting variety.
Tim, most of the bulbs that we've spoken about today are all ones for full sun and well-drained soils. Any that you would recommend for shadier gardens?
Look, shadier gardens are a little bit tricky, but the Lilium family will grow in full sun or part shade. And what we say to people as well, some people say, oh, I've got big trees and I can't grow bulbs. Well, it comes down to a few different categories. Is your tree deciduous? Because if it's a deciduous tree, you can plant your bulbs underneath that tree, and as the tree is leafing up, the bulbs are finishing off. So they're not so crucial in having that full sun position then. But look, I mean, you have to be a little bit careful. But like I say, lilies will definitely grow in a part shade position. You can't put them in total shade. A lot of people will grow them under 50% shade cloth. The dahlia family, while technically not bulbs, they will also grow in sort of a part shaded type environment, and that helps to protect their flowers from the hot summer sun. But you can look at sort of, I guess we move more into the perennial side of things, which people still lump in with bulbs, and things like Lily of the Valley and Solomon's Deal. They'll thrive in a shady type environment.
And what about the Spanish bluebells?
Oh, Spanish bluebells, definitely. Look, they can take almost a total shade. Brilliant blue. We often get people come saying, oh, we want the English bluebell. And I say to people, the difference between the English and the Spanish bluebell is about $2.
Yeah.
You can put them with an expert looking at both, and the difference between the actual flower structure, shape and colour is so negligible, it's almost impossible to tell. But the Spanish does multiply better. It's more suited to our Australian environment.
Yes.
And does perform better. It still carries the same perfume as the English. The reality of it is it just multiplies. It's a plant and forget bulb. That brilliant, true blue. And we have them massed under chestnuts. So obviously chestnuts.
Yes. Oh, I've got them massed under magnolia, you know, magnolia dentata, the
brilliant
white Yulan magnolia, and then the pure white of the magnolia on the top, and then this lovely drift of that pure blue underneath. Yes, a good one, isn't it, for shade gardens? Because people with shady gardens are often despairing of trying to get more flower and colour into their gardens. So I always like to, make sure that we always include shady gardeners, and that's a really good one. So the Spanish bluebells, and as you said, quite a cheap bulb to buy in bulk.
Oh, they are, definitely. Look, I mean, you could expect, depending on the size of the bulb, sort of a premium bulb, 25 bulbs from a local nursery might cost you sort of $20 or thereabouts.
Oh, my goodness, Mr. Druitt, you're a bucket of information. And I have to say, your website's phenomenal, redearthbulbs.com. It's got all of the bulbs that we've spoken about today listed. Fantastic photos as well, so you really know as a gardener what you're getting. And you can just order from your website, and what comes in the mail?
It does. It just comes out in the mail. And basically, we're not as fast as some of the bigger companies because we're just a little one or two man show, but they do come out in the mail here with all the growing instructions, everything you need to know what to do. Our Lilium range is about to be uploaded, sort of winter planting or early winter planting, and the last of the spring flowering bulbs are online now.
Fantastic. And my experience with your Liliums, it was just superb. And so I just cannot wait for next year's, this year's flowering to be bigger and bigger every time. I think Liliums for Sydney gardeners are just really one of the most incredible, generous bulbs that you can get, with a huge amount of flower, fabulous for cut flowers, and that wonderful time of year, early summer, where you just want that garden to kick into gear, and Liliums really do it for you. So head on to redearthbulbs.com if you're intrigued about any of the bulbs that Tim Druitt and I spoke about today. And look, thank you so much for taking some time out of your, I know, very, very crazy day. You've been potting up daffodil pots, thousands of them.
Thousands of daffodil pots. And we sort of did a few days of that last week, and now we're cleaning and grading about 250,000 Lilium bulbs, so lots on the go.
You're very industrious, and a little tiny baby as well.
Yeah, we've got little Xander.
How old's Xander now?
He's just turned 5 months and decided he can crawl. So
already?
Another mover. Yes, already.
Lovely. Let's hope that the next generation take the reins of your bulb company, and it goes from strength to strength. It's really lovely for you to take the time out of that crazy schedule of yours, Tim, and give us all of that wonderful information. So a million thanks.
No problems at all. It's been a pleasure.
And if you are interested in any of the bulbs we spoke about, or just keeping in touch with a really great Aussie bulb company, just head over to Red Earth Bulbs on his Facebook page. He does these great videos. He sometimes shows you these huge paddocks of millions of dahlias, and it's all rather inspiring. And of course, the website, redearthbulbs.com. I hope that you've enjoyed our little chat about spring bulbs. Just a few of my absolute favourites, ones that will give you years and years of enjoyment. And what I love about them is their ephemeral nature. They just pop up in spring, do their thing, and then they just go back down. And that lovely sort of wave of seasonal colour that just gives you that wonderful feeling of spring. Nothing quite does it like spring bulbs. This has been Linda Ross. It's the Garden Clinic podcast. If you've got a question for us on the Garden Clinic, head over to the Garden Clinic Facebook page and we'll be able to answer it each week on our podcasts here. Thank you so much for listening. Happy gardening and go safely.
The best garden. Hi there, Graham Ross. Now, you all know I love gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is just simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol helps with root development? This means that Sea Sol treated plants have a greater access to water and nutrients in the soil. This goes for everything in your garden, from your lawn to your roses, even your veggie patch. So don't just water your garden, Sea Sol your garden.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.